far. It's great to come into a new group and feel that spirit, so I commend you for it. You've helped make this meeting very enjoyable. There's a lot of things that I could say about Senator Atiyah, and his brochure would fill you in on many facts, but there's something that Senator Atiyah does and has done in the past that I feel very close to, and I'd like to, in my introduction, just mention that. Though he is a 20-year legislator, he has served on a National Explorer Board and has earned the highest award in scouting, that is the Silver Beaver and Silver Antelope Award. This country is developing fine leaders, and they're coming through, a lot of them, through the exploring program. And I think as a community and as a nation, we need to realize that there are organizations and there are ways that we can produce leaders by practical experience, and the exploring program is one of them. And the time and effort that people put forth on a volunteer basis, such as Senator Atiyah, is commendable, and I applaud him for it. And we will find out more about his political views today and through the weeks. But for his work and time that he has spent for the young people of our country, I think we owe him a round of applause. And I introduce to you now Senator Vic Atiyah.
I really appreciate that introduction because the work in scouting, I feel, is so valuable. And as a matter of fact, although I've worked in scouting, there are many youth-serving organizations that are doing constructive work in our society. And I thank them for that as well. I want to jump right into the speech, but before I do it, I do thank both of the groups that are with us today for allowing me to come and coming together to arrange this program. We are now, and I think it's roughly 18 and a half days before the election. I'm counting those days because they're important ones. We've already spent, I tried to figure out in days, but certainly well over 9 months of active campaigning, and it was a year ago that I announced to run for governor of the state of Oregon. So it's been a long trail. You can no doubt guess why I'm counting now. But it's an important trail, and it's an important decision, and I feel it very strongly, and I'm working as hard as I can to change the governorship of the state of Oregon. And I believe very deeply in the thing that I'm doing, and I think it's significant that it should happen. We are going to make that decision. There are only two choices for governor. There are no others. And the decision we'll make is going to be definitely a prediction into the next 4 years of the state of Oregon, the direction we're going to take, the attitude of government, and in fact is an important thing going to happen, and is that important thing being that people believe again that their government is theirs. And that's what I want to talk about as strongly as I can, maybe as strongly as I have talked during the course of my entire campaign. Now, there are more than one issue. There are more than two issues. There are several issues on the ballot. There are also issues in the governor's campaign, and they go beyond just ballot measure number 6 and 11. And I want to turn your attention to those kinds of issues because I'm convinced that after the Oregon legislature adjourns in late June, early July of next year, this whole matter that everyone talks about, 6 and 11, will have been resolved. And you will be left with the governor for the remaining 3.5 years. And I want you to think about just that, and the kind of a governor that you in fact want. And I want you to think back, the kind of governor that we've had. Now, I'm going to start off by saying immediately, if you feel that we have been governed well in the last 4 years, that you are being heard in state government, and that government is being run the way you would like to have it run, then there's no question you ought to vote again for Bob Straub. I am not satisfied of that, and I offer you that definite choice. For the first time in a long time, there is a significant difference between the candidates. Significant. And there will be a change. And I want to give you a vision of what that kind of change would be by telling you what I have been saying and repeating what the governor has been saying. And I'll let you make up your own mind as to who ought to be governor. I started off in announcing in October that I was going to run for governor of the state of Oregon. That's October 1977. And I said many things about my vision of Oregon's future. And I said also that property tax relief was the number one issue in the state of Oregon. October of 1977, in a public statement when I declared myself for governor. During the course of the entire campaign, as I've toured the whole state of Oregon, and I have been in every county in the state of Oregon, and I've been in communities as small as Prairie City, Condon and Fossil, on up to the larger towns. I have been everywhere in the state of Oregon, and I can tell you that I'm the only gubernatorial candidate that can say that, and there's only one other. And what have I been telling these people? I've been saying to them that jobs in Oregon were important. And when I talk about jobs, I talk about free enterprise jobs, not government jobs. And I talk about encouraging existing Oregon industries, not get in their way, not put barriers in front of them, but to help them and let them know that government is in fact interested in them because business creates jobs. And I said that this needs to be done because all past governors I've seen have been excited and they fly out of the state of Oregon and they try to bring industry into the state and the cities and the counties and the state government gets together in a united effort to help those industries, and at the same time they are united in getting in the way of those of us that are here. And I said, I'm going to change that. And there ought to be jobs in every community, and young people that graduate can find jobs in their own towns if they want to. I've said that energy was important. Added energy, not shoving around any shortages, but adding to our energy supply, and that my 4 years as governor would be noted, highlighted by the use of our alternatives and encouragement for government by incentives and by government by putting money into research to make these alternatives both possible and cost less. I talked about the timber industry in the state of Oregon and issued a statement that said that I believe that Oregon ought to take over the management of all public forest lands in this state, and that I was sick and tired of having this resource managed by the Eastern bureaucrats and Congress, which has mismanaged the resource. I talked about efficient and effective government, and I came at it in a way in which I said, look, here I am, 20 years as a legislator, someone that knows what is going into the machinery of government, someone that built the machinery of government. I was there when all of those bills passed. I knew what it was we had in mind. I knew what it should happen. I know where we're not going and should go. And so I said, not the esoteric, efficient, and effective government, but saying, look, there are things wrong with government. We can change them. It can be done. It needs to be done by someone that knows what state government is all about. And that's me. And I do. But beyond that, I have the credibility with the Oregon legislature and with our state employees, and I need both of those, and anyone needs both of those, to accomplish what they want to do. I'm going to depend very heavily on state employees to help me, and they already have. And I've gotten some great suggestions, and I'm going to open up the line of communication. But the most significant thing that I have said and the most significant difference between Bob Straub and Vic Atiyah is in the matter of listening to people and speaking for people. And I'm going to prove that to you. I'm going to prove it to you at least as clear as I can see it. And to me, it's absolutely clear. And it's clear from statements from both of us, public statements. Those are what I'm going to talk about. And I'm going to talk about the public record. And let's now start, instead of October of last year, January of last year. I introduced a bill to return the surplus, $170 million, back to the taxpayer. The governor of Oregon said, quote, that is irresponsible. Now remember that. He said returning the surplus was irresponsible. And the reason I want you to hang on to that is I'm going to come back to it later on. I tried to get indexing. It's a fancy word to make it soften the effect of inflation on our incomes. Inflation gives us more money. We get more taxes because we have more money. Many people get bumped into new tax brackets. I said that wasn't fair. We had no encouragement, no comment at all from the governor's office. Never had a hearing on that bill. And so now we move into October, and I said property tax relief was the number one issue. And before the primary was over, I said that here is a specific plan for property tax relief, and I issued that plan, and it included a limitation. Now, I want you to understand, when I'm trying to give back $170 million, that means that's $170 million the governor cannot spend. And he wanted to, $170 million. And when I'm talking about property tax relief, that's exactly what I mean. And I have been doing that, remember this now, before there was a ballot 13 in California. I wasn't shoved into doing this. I knew that's what Oregonians were thinking about. I knew that's where Oregonians had a problem. And I articulated that. And I wasn't forced into it. And remember that too. I wasn't forced into it. And now we come to July of this year, and ballot measure number 6 becomes a reality, and the governor of the state of Oregon immediately issues a comment, and it goes like this, quote, "I'm against the principle and I'm against the language of ballot measure number 6. Now let's find out what is he's against. What's the principle of 6? The principle of 6 is controlling government income. The principle of 6 is controlling the skyrocketing increase in assessed values. And the principle of 6 is limiting the charge you could put against that property, 1.5%. And the governor announced himself in July that he was against that principle. I'm not making this up. This is all public information, what the governor of Oregon said. He's trying to make you forget what he said. I'm trying to make you remember what he said and what I said. Now we come to August. Early August, the governor of the state of Oregon took what I call a fateful 3-day trip through Oregon. 3 days. He came back and had a press conference in Salem, and he said, quote, "Property taxes are more prominent in the minds of the people than I thought." August 10th, 1978. That has to be one of the most incredible statements made by anyone, let alone a governor of the state of Oregon. If he had been a hermit, I could understand, and I think it's exactly what he has been, a hermit in the Capitol building. Let's look at also the one that's talking to us about wanting to be governor again to control government spending and to give us property tax relief. Because the only thing I have heard him talk about is ballot measure number 11. That's the only issue he has, and so he's trying to tell us that he's the champion, and he is the one that's discovered all of this thing, and he's the one that's going to bring us out into the sunshine. Let's talk about that. He just discovered we had problems with property tax relief. The record also tells us very clearly that it took 115 years and 30 governors to reach the first $1 billion general fund budget. 1859 to 1974. Now it took one governor, Bob Straub, and 4 years to reach the next $1 billion general fund budget. And let's try that one on for size. This person that wants to be the leader in holding down government spending. Now, I told you that I accepted the principle of 6. There are many ways to accomplish what needs to be done, but when 200,000 Oregonians line up, incidentally, I keep hearing this word, the California thing. Those are Oregonians that signed that petition, not Californians. That makes it an Oregon issue. When 200,000 Oregonians sign a petition, then by golly, anyone that's asking to represent Oregonians ought to listen to them. And so I said, yes, I'll accept the principle. I'll deal with the language. And I finally stated, I will go with the principle of 6, but there needs to be some changes made. I've said that consistently from the first time I announced my position on 6. And everyone knows where I stand on that issue. So all the time, here is Vicatia on the side of the people.
And here is the governor of the state of Oregon that just discovered that people had a problem. There's one other thing that I think you need to know. And that is, by November 8th, ballot measure number 6 will have passed or failed. Ballot measure number 11 will have passed or failed. Or they both will have passed. Excuse me, they both will have failed. Now let's think about that kind of a scenario. Who do you want in the governor's office in any of those eventualities? One who has said if 6 passes needs to be changed and is dedicated to that, and that's what I've said, and I offered that to the special session of the Oregon legislature. One who has to deal with 11, which has spending limits that are a little bit nebulous and have to be tightened down, and I have consistently said that we ought to hold down government spending in the state of Oregon. Or do you want someone, in the event that 6 or 11 does, one of them passes, being the governor of the state of Oregon that just discovered that we had a problem, that's been opposed to 6 and has made no constructive recommendations for it, or hasn't proven to us that he can hold down government spending, and he's going to be in charge of that? And let's look at what would happen in the event they both fail. I have already said publicly that if both 6 and 11 fail, I will not feel the heat is off, because I have been talking about it for years. And that if 6 fails, I intend to come back with a 6 or 11 fail with a cleaned up ballot measure number 6 and refer it back to the people of the state of Oregon, because I'm convinced that Oregonians want some stop somewhere. I've said that publicly. Now let me quote you what I read in this morning's paper. And this is in regard to if neither ballot measure 6 or 11 passes. And this is the governor of the state of Oregon, and he is saying this. He said it yesterday. If neither 6 or 11 pass, I would not favor or promote through the legislature another measure. What I would do is use the income tax surpluses in various ways to return the money to the people who own homes and rent. So he's already told you that if 6 and 11 fail, he won't do anything about it. He won't come back with a spending limit. He won't come back with a governmental income limit. He'll do the same thing that's been going on now for years and years and years after 200,000 Oregonians said, for crying out loud, let's stop. Now, I haven't given you anything that's not a public record. It's not my opinion. It's not out of context. I've told you the whole thing, what I have done and what the governor has done. Now, I happen to believe that people are important. I have absolute confidence that the Oregon legislature, if 6 passes, will make the amendments, and that you and I will be voting on those in late February, early March of next year. The governor does not have that confidence or trust in
either the Oregon legislature or the people of the state of Oregon.
Why do I want to be governor? I'm telling you, if I have never demonstrated anything before in my life, that we have a leader in Oregon that's not listening to us.
I have been talking about people and people involvement and the fact that they can become a member of their own government. And that's important to me.
It's important to me, not for me as governor of the state of Oregon. It's important to me because that's the very basic foundation of our system of government. And that we cannot have that separation and survive
as a democracy. And so it's time really to open up that door, to tear down the wall around Salem that I described, to allow you again to become members of your own government, to give you a sense, a feeling of responsibility and pride in your government. And that is the message that I've been carrying around the state. And that's what I've been talking about. And that's why I've traveled almost 40,000 miles since I started my active campaign. Because I wanted to make sure that people heard me. And I wanted to make sure that people could see me and listen to me. And I wanted to make sure that they could understand that this is the person, this is the real person, really feels very strongly about getting people involved. I can assure you that you will be proud of your government with me as governor. You will return your pride and respect in your government. You will feel that government is yours once again.
That attitude of, oh, what's the use, will disappear. And people will become excited again about their government. And they'll want to participate in their government. And if I haven't proven to you that I'm the one that is speaking for people, then I guess I can never prove any point that I can ever make. I hope that I have proven to you that I have been listening to you, that I am speaking for you, and that in fact I want you as part of government in this state. And so, I want you to think of two things. First of all, when you read in the newspaper, and I know that you will, on November 8th, that Atiyah was elected governor of the state of Oregon, I want each one of you to say individually to yourself that you won governor of the state of Oregon. And until then, for 18 and a half days, where it says it's time for Atiyah, you say it's time for you. Thank you very much. I'm half statesman and half politician. The description was that a politician is one running for office and a statesman is not elected, and I am a statesman. Yes,
Senator, you mentioned that you'd like to take over the federal control of forest lands in the state. It sounds very impressive to hear you say that, but it seems like an impossible task. Do you have any direct plans on how this could happen?
Yes, well, I can't honestly say direct plans. It's a definitive statement that I made, in which I was saying that we would probably buy contracts with the Forest Service and the BLM to use their people. I had no intention of changing any of the wilderness that was going to be described, or the forest receipts, or any of that business. It's just that the actual management, in effect, would be contracted to the state of Oregon, and that we would manage in the sense of reforestation or thinning, or what kind of cutting practices might be. Now, and that's what I basically had in mind. But let me say this, the same kind of response I've heard before, you know, that's so far out and it never can happen. But my frustration is real. I've dealt with this for now 20 years, and I said to myself, I don't like what's going on now. There has to be another way, and there certainly will not be any other way unless somebody tries something. And so I made that suggestion. I might add that I've never talked to the regional forester before, but after that statement, he said, would you mind coming visiting with me, which I did. So at least something's happened. There's another question somewhere.
I'm sorry.
What are some of the changes you'd like to make in that
state? All right, let me describe it as quickly as I can. First, I would separate owner-occupied homes and business. I would freeze the values of both. I would limit the charge against the homes to 1.5%, which is purely 6. I would limit, and this would be a constitutional limit as well, the charge against business to the rate wherever that business happens to be, and that's going to vary around Oregon. It might be as high as $30 in some places, it could be as low as $15 in others. But the point is that the values of both would be frozen and the rates would be frozen. Then there was a section that you remember that whether the property was sold, remodeled, or there was change of ownership, could be reassessed. That created problems between us as homeowners and between homeowners and business.
I wiped that all out. We said that the assessed values could increase at an Oregon-described consumer price index. I included mobile homeowners because their property is known as personal property. Renters, in the event the state deals with homeowners and property tax relief, renters would get the same. Now, those are the basic and major changes. The effect of what I have done, however, is that it reduced the loss to local government, or the cost to state government, whichever way you look at it, to $300 million versus $850 million, approximately of 6. I would also tell you that was the least expensive plan of all of them. Ballot measure number 11 is over $500 million and will grow rapidly in the years ahead. Yes?
I hear varying figures about our surplus in the state government. $170 million, $300 million, $400 million. Is it an accurate figure?
Well, the only, I guess you'd call accurate figure is that which is developed out of the executive department and was announced last week. And if I'm not mistaken, it went up from $225 million to $256 million as a projected surplus at the end of the biennium, which would be July of next year, June 30th next year would be the end of the biennium. That's the only scientific figure I can tell what science involved in that. I can tell you, in my mind, it will probably be close to $350 million. But I'm just reaching back in my 20-year pocket and coming up with that. If it's $256 million now, a lot more than that. when we're going to be in session. And incidentally, a lot of that is because of inflation during all that talk about index. Yes.
Yes, the importance of tourism to Oregon is well acknowledged by the fact that the state of Oregon spends a considerable amount of money attracting tourists to the state. Yet, on the other hand, we penalize those tourists who drive recreational vehicles into the state by charging them a $2 surcharge at any of our state parks. What is your stand on this position?
I support that. And I look right in the eyes when I say that. That's pretty good for a politician to do that. And I can tell you that the greatest complaint that I received before this was put into effect was from Oregonians who could not get into state parks. And I heard a tremendous amount of complaint from those Oregonians. We may disagree, and I suppose we will from time to time, and that is what we do, but that's my position on it. Yes.
There's been some discussion recently on the bonding capacity of the state.
Yes.
Would you care to comment on that?
Yes. The discussion related to ballot 6, the bonding capacity and ability to bond, veterans bond and local governments, related because 6 itself, and incidentally, I'm sorry, was under another important part of 6 I didn't mention. 6 initially does say now 75, 76 tax years, so you go back and effectively lose a lot of assessed value. And that was the one they were concerned about, because you measure the ability to sell bonds in relation to the assessed value. That's where the Veterans Department lost the bonding authority, or ability to sell bonds. My proposal on ballot measure 6, my cleanup of it, was for the 77, 78 tax year. And then you won't have that kind of a loss. The growth will be there in assessed value, but now at a steady, determined growth rate. So it won't grow as fast in the future. We won't roll back in the past. Yes?
Do you plan on making any changes in the Oregon State Police
structure? Do I plan to make any changes in the Oregon State Police structure? I do plan to look into it. I am concerned about some things that I've heard in regard to the Oregon State Police. One of them, of course, is some complaints from the officers that they're not being treated right, or the hours, or a variety of things that I've heard. I want to make sure, first of all, that there is direct and early knowledge about what this job means before they get into it. In other words, if you know something ahead of time, I personally don't think you have a right to complain about it later. If you don't know, and then it's laid on you, then I do think you have a right to complain. If there is a complaint procedure that I want to get into, and maybe a little bit better appeals within the system, better and maybe more objective appeal system in state police. But yes, I'm going to talk to the state police. I've heard enough to worry me enough to check into it. Yes?
You've discussed your 20 years as a legislator. How about your personal business relationships?
Well, I don't know where to start. I'm president of the Tia Brothers. That sounds real good, but when you have three brothers, you know, you kind of flip a coin and decide who's going to be president. It's a business in which it's a now business, 78 years old, started in 1900 by my father and uncle. It's the rugged carpet business. Is that called for a fine? Anyway, my brothers and I took over my dad and I when they were quite young. The business is bigger today than it was. We've added to it. I'm very proud. I'm very proud of my brothers. They have worked very hard because I've been in politics. And I attribute a great deal of success to them. But the business is bigger than it was, it's healthier than it was, and we employ more people by far than we did. Yes?
How about your views of the Public Utility Commissioner?
My views on the Public Utility Commissioner, I guess I can just say about anything I want. You didn't direct it too carefully. I will say that I plan to offer to the next session of the Oregon Legislature a 3-member commission. Mm-hmm. I do that for 2 reasons. There's more duty of the commissioner's office than just utility rate setting, railroads and rail trade, things of that kind. And so I want to distribute the weight of the work that needs to be done. Second, I think when we're dealing with things as we are now, and that is, of course, our utility rates, I really would like to have more than one person making that decision. So I will be making that recommendation. What am I hearing back here?
I said amen.
Oh. I'm glad you repeated it. Yes.
What's your view on state government housing projects underway in the state of Oregon and started to kind of model after the veterans program, but there seems to be some of stalemated been developing anymore.
Yes,
will it continue or stop?
No, no, it will continue. And I don't know if we can really get into it in too much depth, except to let you know I know a little bit about it, probably not as much as you do. This was the low-cost housing for seniors, is what it was, and bond measure really the bond last session. And there was also the loans to lenders, and they're working through the savings and loans and financial institutions, and none of them like it, but they're doing it. I'm saying that the program can be of value, more value than it is. Apparently there's some bureaucracy that's actually stopping it from happening, and I'm aware of it, but I can't give you any more details except to let you know that I am, and something needs to be done to make it work. Yes?
A great concern of business is the workman's comp rates in the state of Oregon. What would you do to alleviate this problem?
All right, the question was the workers' comp rate is important. What I do to alleviate the problem? First, let me let you know what I have done, and then tell you what will happen subsequently. First of all, before last session, I was on a subcommittee out of Trade and Economic Development investigating to see what the problem was. Why Oregon, which has 1% of the population in the state, in the nation, has 25% of the permanent total disabled in the United States. And we were trying to figure this whole thing out. I might add, as we were going through it, I've never seen a deal like this. I described it like trying to nail a jellyfish to the wall. You think you've got something and it slips off. But anyway, last session we did some important things. And I didn't think they were going to occur, but they did. We did eliminate one step in the appeals process. We did change the odd lot doctrine, which was a legal description that was, I think, creating a lot of these permanent total disabled. And we changed our relationship with Social Security. Prior to last session, Social Security would make up the little difference that workers' comp didn't. We just changed it around and said workers' comp will fill up what Social Security does. And that helped. Now, those are three significant things last session. And I applaud the legislature for doing that. But we need to do a much better job in rehabilitation, more rapidly, get into that. Get a person fixed up before they become permanently, you know, just like sitting down and watching the daytime shows. I don't know if they can do that, but it's possible. But get that going a little faster. Eliminate doctor shopping. We have to do that. They just keep going from doctor to doctor to doctor. We're going to have to deal and get the cooperation of the medical profession in this one and many other areas to just bring that cost down. And may I finally say this, that I'm confident a lot of it can happen because I believe that labor is firmly convinced that there are a lot of jobs not being created because of the high cost of workers' comp. And they are now really cooperating with us and trying to get some changes done. And they realize in order for them to get both increased benefits or more jobs, they have to help us make changes. Yes?
I'd like to call you back to your three-member PUC.
Yes.
Do you feel that a three-member PUC with businesses involved in PUC regulation, such as the moving industry, is having a great deal of competition right now through what we would call a legal mover, and we're getting absolutely no results out of the PUC as far as the investigation of these. I believe that free enterprise is naturally a democratic way, but however, when we're paying for our rights to business in a town by buying a business license and paying workers' compensation, that should be the way of free enterprise, through proper steps. How do you feel about that?
I was trying to listen to a question here. Are you saying, do I say that three members would make it possible for more investigation and better knowledge of the industry? Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. That you could have a commissioner, three-member commission, each of them having a separate responsibility, and they would be able to pay attention to that responsibility more than a single commissioner can do now.
Well, we feel that there's a great deregulation going on in the state as far as that type of investigation due to the lack of investigating power in the PC, and it's a great concern for us.
Yes.
The OLCC, what is your position on the abolishment of that?
I do not support the abolishment of the OLCC. I do support some changes in it. Quickly to mind the separation of the licensing and policing. They're both in the same agency. I think part of the problem that we had matter of 1,000 or one permit for 2,000 population should be changed somewhat to take the pressure on. But I have no intention of doing what the governor has said he intends to do, and that's to open it all up. I have no intention whatsoever of doing it. The free state consumption of alcohol is anywhere from 15% to 20% higher per capita than it is in the state of Oregon. And people can get whiskey if they want it, maybe sometimes difficult. They can get it if they want it. And I just have no intention of opening it up. But some changes, yes, and I think they're appropriate. Yes.
As governor, do you intend to pursue policies which would encourage population growth by out-of-staters in Oregon?
Let me tell you about that. Would I encourage policies that would have population growth? Something like that. Anyway, the idea is clear. Let me tell you something about population growth, and I'll say it as clearly as I can. I have worked, well, first let me say that the livability in Oregon brings with it seeds of its own destruction, because others want what we have, and when they come here, we won't have it. But I've worked for a long time and am proud of my record in the environmental field, and I helped write the air and water quality law. I've been working diligently to straighten up the land use planning laws that I think are important for the growth of the state of Oregon. I have worked on open space legislation, a variety of environmental laws that brings to life livability. But the one thing I will promise you is that I'm not going to blab it all over the United States what a great state Oregon is. And that's exactly what about all the people in the state of Oregon. We took a message about the bottle bill to every state in the union. And I'm just saying that that's okay for some people if they like that, but I'm going to keep my mouth shut. Now, that's the only way you can control population. There's no other way you can do it. And the other thing is, with environmental law, you can control how it grow. That's all you can do. And I'm with it, and I'm staying there. But I'm going to keep my mouth shut.
Talk to the Wall Street Journal, too.
Pardon?
Talk to the Wall Street Journal.
Actually, well, this is not fair. I've got the Oregonian writer here, but I said before the best way for me to keep a secret is make a press release. So. Well, you did allow me a little bit more time, and but I've gone a few minutes over. I again want to thank you all for coming. I certainly want your support and need your support. I need you to maybe clarify all of that. There's a lot of strident messages out there going on right now. We're getting into that abrasive, I guess, last part of a campaign. I'm trying to tell you as clearly as I can the differences between us as candidates. I try to do it. I think it's fair game because it's record, and that you just have to decide who you want to be governor, whether you want to be governor to be Bob Straub or you. Thank you very much.